This is Peter Holzapfel, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to stars and stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
Turnout on Tuesdays from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the WGXC Catskill Studio to learn about Wavefarms WGXC, tour the studio, record a station ID or PSA, or pick up a sticker. The WGXC Catskill Studio is located at 393 Main Street in Catskill. Come on by for a visit and see how you can get involved in your local community radio station.
Wavefarms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Clark Griffin of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Ever since songwriters started writing songs, they have written songs about a rose.
About a rose.
Red roses, blue roses, old roses, new roses. Roses from the south and east and west. But here's the rose song that I love the best.
The best.
Show me a rose, I'll show you a girl who cares. Show me a rose, or leave me alone. Show me a rose, I'll show you a stag at bay. Show me a rose, or leave me alone. She taught me how to do the tango, down where the palm trees sway. I called her Rosa Mia, and she called a spade, show me a rose, I'll show you a storm at sea, show me a rose, or leave me alone. One night in Bixby, Mississippi, we watched the clouds roll by. I said, my dear, how are you? And she whispered, so am I. Show me a rose, I'll show you a girl named Sam. Show me a rose, or leave me alone.
Show me a rose,
show me a rose,
a friend.
that you don't know me until you show me a rose.
A fragrant
welcome, everybody, to Gregory Forte's Radio Museum. Your regularly scheduled program has been interrupted, handed over to me, but I'm going to keep it to a theme of movies and soundtracks and musicals. What I do on my show at the Radio Museum is I play some old voices from the past, either people who were on the radio or people who were sort of out there as nightclub entertainers. Tonight we're going to hear a reading from Spalding Gray. But before we do that, we're going to hear some show tunes. So welcome aboard. And let's enjoy.
See, them cops, they believe everything they read in the papers about us cruddy JDs. So that's what we give them. Something to believe in.
Hey, you!
Who, me, Officer Krupke?
Yeah, you! Give me one good reason for not dragging you down to the station house, you punk!
Dear kindly Sergeant Krupke, you gotta understand, it's just our bringing up key that gets us out of hand. Our mothers all are junkies, our fathers all are drunks. Golly Moses, naturally we're punks.
Gee, Officer Krupke, we're very upset. We never had the love that every child ought to get. We ain't no delinquents, we're misunderstood. Deep down inside us, there is good.
There is good,
there is good, there is good, there is untapped good. Like inside, the worst of us is good.
That's a good story.
Let me tell it to the world.
Just tell it to the judge.
Dear kindly judge, your honor, my parents treat me rough with all their marijuana. They won't give me a puff. They didn't want to have me, but somehow I was had. Leap on lizards, that's why I'm so bad.
Wait, Officer Krupke, you're in your square. This boy don't need a judge, he needs an analyst care. It's just his neurosis that ought to be quite. He's psychologically disturbed.
I'm disturbed.
We're disturbed. We're disturbed. We're the most disturbed. Like we're psychologically disturbed.
Hey, hey. In the opinion of Esquire, this child is depraved on account he ain't had a normal home.
Hey, I'm depraved on account I'm deprived.
So take him to a head shrinker. You.
Who, me?
My daddy beats my mommy, my mommy clobbers me. My grandpa is a commie, my grandma pushes tea. My sister wears a mustache, my brother wears a dress. Goodness gracious, that's why I'm a mess.
Yes, Officer Krupke, he shouldn't be here. This boy don't need a couch, he needs a useful career. Society's played him a terrible trick. Unsociologically sick.
I am sick.
We are sick. We are sick. We are sick. Sick, sick. Like we're sociologically sick.
In my opinion, this child does not need to have his head shrunk at all. Juvenile delinquency is purely a social disease. Hey, I got a social disease. So take him to a social worker.
Which way?
That way.
Dear kindly social worker, they tell me get a job, like be a soda jerker, which means like be a slob. It's not I'm anti-social, I'm only anti-work. Glory, I see, that's why I'm a jerk.
Officer Krupke, you've done it again. This boy don't need a job, he needs a year in the pen. It ain't just a question of misunderstood. Deep down inside him, he's no good.
I feel good.
We're no good, we're no good.
The trouble is he's lazy.
The trouble is he drinks.
The trouble is he's crazy.
The trouble is he stinks.
The trouble is he's growing.
The trouble is he's grown.
Krupke, we've got troubles of our own. Officer Krupke, we're down on our knees.
'Cause no one wants a fella with a social disease.
Officer Krupke, what are we to do? Chief Officer Krupke.
I think we're off to a good start here. I'm going to make some room for Spalding Gray to tell us a story about him buying a home up here in the Catskills. It's a recording he did when he was working with the Worcester Group. The name of the performance was The Pleasures and Terrors of Domestic Life. So we're going to hear about 30 minutes of Spalding Gray.
In the summer of 1982, 83, and 84, my girlfriend Renee and I rented a cabin in upstate New York in Crumville, K-R-U-M-V-I-L-L-E. Howie and Francine, landlord and landlady, couldn't have been nicer. The price was right. They said we could rent it every year. The only problem with it was, as I saw it, there was no water. So I began this search for flowing water in the neighborhood, and I came upon the Esopus River, I would call it. They call it a creek off Route 28. The only problem, as I saw it, as I still do see it, with the river is or was the tubers. And in case you don't know what tubers are, they are great, oversized men, women, and children that float down that river in herds on weekdays, hordes on weekends, in these great oversized truck inner tubes with six packs of Budweiser in their laps, drinking all the way. If they haven't got a room for the beer, they rent an extra tube and put fish netting in it and drop the six packs down in there and trail them behind them. In fact, one time when Renee and I took a hike, the only hike we ever took up Mount Tremper, fighting all the way up and all the way down. We were coming down off that mountain. It was a beautiful summer day. It was like a commercial. It was so beautiful. And we stepped into that clear river. An ice-cold can of unopened Budweiser just came floating by. Renee just reached out, took it, popped it, and chug-a-lugged it down. We were thinking of selling it to the Budweiser people, you know, as an ad. You know, young yuppie couple steps out of mountain. This Bud's for you type of situation. But we didn't. Instead, I got obsessed with the idea of property and ownership. I wasn't married, I didn't have a family. I thought maybe if I owned my own home, I would feel like an adult. Also, I began to have these dreams of houses with rooms, recurrent dreams of houses with rooms. Like one of the houses, like a house I grew up in. I was living in a loft in Soho. I thought that's what I wanted, one big room. And now I was dreaming of houses with rooms, rooms that you go into to cook, another room you might go into to sleep, another room you might go into to read, watch television, lie down, or do nothing and close the door behind you. Houses with rooms. And I was determined to find one and buy one. I was looking for the perfect $30,000 house. And I started out looking with this real estate agent. She and I had this great relationship. We'd usually go out on weekends, and we go look at all these houses. Now, as we started doing it, I began to realize that what I was really doing with her was I was more interested in what was going on in the houses when we got in, the little domestic scenes we interrupted, what were the kids doing, the tchotchkes on the wall, what kind of paintings they had, you know, and then we go on to the next house, and I begin to describe to her what I noticed in the last house. It became like this ongoing soap opera, and I just wanted to go up and see the insides of houses, you know. She was having it a ball, but, you know, finally she had to stop because she was a professional, you see. And she had to try to sell me something, so she could see the houses weren't going, so she tried to sell me property, you know, maybe talk me into building the perfect house. So she showed me 80 acres, and I go charging in. Oh, I felt like a pioneer. My heart was in my throat. I was going ahead looking for certain borders, and I began to notice it, and I said, look at this beautiful land. I will turn it into an art park. You know, let my friends from Soho come up and wander through it to meditate, you see, and do it as a tax write-off. And as I get further into it, I don't know if this happens to you, but every time I see something that I think I want across a crowded room and then I get it, it's like, it reaches out and strangles me. So the further into the woods I'm getting, the more I'm looking down and seeing these imperfections, like, what is all this dead wood doing on the ground? I have never been in the woods and noticed so many dead trees. Would I have to pick those up? Oh, what about lightning insurance? Can you get insurance for lightning? What about the hunters when they come through in autumn? Wait a minute. What if the gypsy moths come back next year when they're not supposed to come back? Can you imagine owning 80 denuded acres? I just got out of there. So after about 2 years of going out with this woman, this real estate woman, I began to feel guilty, you know? I began to feel like I was going steady with no intentions of marriage. And I switched to a real estate man. He was nice enough. He smoked a cigar. I don't know if you've ever experienced this. You think one real estate agent knows the territory, you get another and they know all these new nooks and crannies. We're driving west on Route 28. He turns left over this metal bridge, down this long little cul-de-sac that goes a little dead-end road right into the crotch of the Catskills. And he parks in front of this little Adirondack-style cabin, which is up on a knoll. I would have to describe the landscape as kind of overgrown chunks, you know, with a willow tree out front. We go in, we interrupt this incredible domestic Sunday scene. The kids are running around playing hide-and-seek. Mom is trying to turn blueberry pancakes with 2 teaspoons because she's lost her spatula, you know. Everything stops and freezes like I'm the local undertaker. And they stare at me, and the guy, the real estate agent, takes me into the corner, and his cigary breath, he says, "Listen, I think we can get this cheap. I think we can get it for $26.5. His older daughter has to have an emergency kidney operation or she'll die." I don't want any part of that karma. As I'm going out, I look across and see this other little Adirondack-style cabin, and my heart goes out to it. I mean, it's like the little house that cried. I look across and see the screens are ripped, the windows are kind of ratty. I know that it hasn't been lived in a long time, and I begin heading out for it, and the real estate agent says, "Nope, Mr. Gray, no, back here, please. Stay away from that." And I'm going, "Oh, really? Why? No, please. Look, that's not on the market. Wish it could help you. The husband and wife, I don't know, they're getting a divorce. They're separating. One wants to sell 1 year. The next doesn't want to sell. They can't make up their mind. It's not on the market. I'm sorry to tell you if it was." So winter came to the Catskills, as it often does. And somewhere midwinter, I came upon this ad for a small Adirondack-style cabin in the heart of the Catskills. $35,000. Fantastic. I can't believe it. It's being sold by the owner, not a real estate agent. His name is Johnny Delfredo. He lives in Queens, and he wants to sell me the house. He's sure that I'm the right one for it. I ask him, "Listen, what's the landscaping like?" He said, "Well, we've kept it natural. We like to call it a kind of hill and dale affair. You must see it," he says. And he wants to show it to me, but his car is in the repair shop, so it's going to be a little while. Well, I can't wait to see it. I think from the description he's given me that this is actually the little house that cried. We borrow a car and drive up. The house is locked. Renee finds this rusty saw on the front porch, breaks in, wedges it between the latch and the door jamb. Boop, it opens. There's this one central room in this small cabin. It's wall-to-wall linoleum pattern linoleum, you know. The furniture is, I would have to describe it as kind of C.S. Roebuck, Amway, Ethan Allen motif. No. A couple of big, giant, bald eagle, Ethan Allen lamps on either side of this gold-speckled Castro convertible couch. A big blonde hi-fi with about 100 dusty, easy listening records. You know, Les Paul and Mary Ford, "The Whole World Is Waiting for the Sunrise" with a polka beat. Mouse shit everywhere under "God Bless Our Home" signs in every language. All right, over here to this area is a cooking area. A kitchen, I would call it a kitchen. It's not a room that you can close the door, but it's got the refrigerator and the stove. Over here, the fireplace made from stones from the Esopus Creek. Then, best of all, out back, like a Goldilocks afterthought kind of situation, the 3 rooms. I mean, they look kind of like closets. The only way you could tell the mass of the closet, it had a double bed in it. So you had that one, you could close the door, and then the next room had a single bed in it, and the third room had no beds in it. And I thought, this is exactly the room that I would close the door and write the great American novel. And all the time, Renee, because she knows the house is not perfect, is chanting over my shoulder, "Remember, you can change the house, but you can't change the location. And you can change the house, but you can't change the location." I rushed out to see the location, and it was fantastic. The only problem was the foundation. There really wasn't one. I mean, it was kind of cinder block that had caved in, you know, and the house was dropping down dangerously close to the earth. Renee had her Polaroid and took a few close-ups of the foundation problem. Also took some beautiful shots of the house right on with the porch and everything. And we drove back down to the city, and I kept those Polaroids in my desk drawer. And every time I thought about buying that house, every time I thought about it, I'd just take them out and look at them and think, look at that sweet little thing. It's not quite a house. It's not quite a cabin. God, how could that give me any problems? It's amazing how you can mistake a Polaroid for a house, or for your girlfriend or boyfriend, and I put it back in the drawer. So all the time, Johnny Delfredo, the owner of the house, is calling me up, when can we go up, when can we go up? You know, he wants to know when we go up. So I make an agreement, his car's out of the shop. We're to meet at the corner of West Broadway and Canal Street. He says, it's a lovely, beautiful day. He said, look for me, I'm driving a 69 two-tone red and white Cadillac. So he arrives, you can't miss him. I walk out, he's about 54 years old, maybe a toupee, I don't know, I never can tell, a couple of gold Stex chains around his neck. We get in the car and we're off, and the first thing he does is ask me, what do I do for a living? So I chose writer that day. And he says, good, we'll have a lot to talk about. I'm an artist myself. I'm a florist in Queens. So we're off. No sooner do we get into Jersey than he tells me his tragic life story that people often want to do, why he's selling the house. It's kind of a contemporary, bucolic story of Joe. Everything was going fine. He had a lovely wife and three daughters. They would summer up there every summer. In the autumn, he would hunt with his buddies. In the winter, he would ski because the house was winterized. Very important, the house was winterized. And one winter, he was skiing and felt this ripping, tearing sound. And he looked out and saw the ski was headed in the wrong way. He had broken his right leg in three places. He wanted to get to the best doctor possible very quickly. So he goes to Albany, to the man that invented the shin pin. Only the man that invented the shin pin was 54 years old when he invented it, and now he was 80 and senile. He proceeds to put into Johnny's leg what he refers to as a kind of nut and bolt affair in three different places without anesthesia. When Johnny goes to have it cast taken off, he's crying out because of the pain. The nurse has got the cast over his head saying, shut up or I'll bop you with this, right? He says it's unbelievable. He's driving in his car. Shortly after that, he smells the stench coming off his leg. He's got gangrene. You know, he can't believe this. He can't work. He's fighting with his wife. His three daughters are siding with his wife. They're not talking to him. They've rejected him. They're having a big fight. They're cooking water for spaghetti. He backs up on his crutches, bumps the big pot. The scalding water goes all over his wife. She sues. She gets possession of the house. He moves out to a storefront in Brooklyn. He says, imagine me, Johnny Delfredo, living in a storefront in Brooklyn with lawn furniture and orange crates for furniture. Me! Look, I didn't even know him. Shortly after that, he has a heart attack, and he doesn't want to spend the money on the bypass, so he's now popping heart pills and smoking true cigarettes. Look, I was thinking of jumping out of the car. I mean, we were only in New Jersey. What were we going to talk about for the next 2 hours to Kingston? Mainly what we talked about is how I should buy a big car when driving on the freeways. Big General Motors car, you know, maybe a Cadillac, maybe his. We get to the Rotary at Kingston. We turn left on 28, and all silence prevails. There's nothing to be said. We are suddenly in the winter beauty of the Catskills. Rolling snow-covered mountains, clear blue sky, powdered snow blowing through pine trees. Left on Shady Valley Road, down over the little metal bridge, past the Kidney House, and into the driveway of the little house that cried, which is completely filled with snow, and he just goes, boom, right into the snowbank. Boom, he is ramming it with the Cadillac. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think he's going to have a heart attack before I see the house. He leaves the Cadillac in the snowbank, and we charge up in thigh-deep snow. He opens the door, we go in, and I don't know what to say. I mean, I don't know. What do I say about the house? I don't know what to tell. Why is that floor slanting, for instance, there? He goes, that's not slanting. And I believed him. I didn't want it to be slanting. And I said, well, the fireplace, for instance, that looks like it's sinking. It really looks like it's sinking. He goes, no, that's settled. We had a major settlement here in 58. We had a big flood come down off the mountain. The house shifted. It's settled. It's not going anywhere. I put a drainage ditch out back. Then he wants to show me all the good points of the house. First of all, the heating system. He has a furnace in the attic. Look, he throws a switch on the wall, and these five heating ducts on the ceiling, heat comes out, and it kind of balls and clusters up there. Then he wants to show me the water is so wonderful. He's got the best well in the area. Of course, it's not on now because it's winter, so he's got it in a thermos, the water. I assume it's not Polar Springs or something. It's good. It's damn good. Well, we're drinking the water while waiting the heat to reach the floor, you know. And All the time I can hear Renee's, you know, chanting in my ear. You can change the house, but you can't change the location. And I want to get outside in winter to see that winter location. Because Johnny Delfredo has told me that the view is priceless from two sycamore trees down in the Indervale by the trout stream. And I rush out down the door, he behind me. I go down over Shady Valley Road, down along the Indervale, puffing and huffing, heading toward these two sycamore trees. I turn and see him behind me, running in thigh-deep snow. He puffing, popping heart pills, saying, the doctor told me never to walk in deep snow again. And I get there, standing by the sycamore trees, and I look all the way down that valley. It was fantastic. It was like I wanted to buy that day for $35,000. And I turn, and there he was behind me, all watery-eyed, staring. And suddenly, my heart went out to him. I saw him as this blue-collar, working-class, contemporary King Lear. There he was, standing there, thigh-deep in the snow. All three of his daughters had turned against him. There he was, King Lear, standing there next to me, the fool. And I thought, how could a man that looks like this sell me a bum house? And we went for lunch on Route 28, and we begin the negotiations. I start out 27. No way, Mr. Spaulding. No way. 27, I am insulted. Don't you know that buying property is simply a matter of taking money out of one pocket and putting it into the other, and taking money out of that pocket and putting it into the other? Now, I've heard about that. I've read about that. But I'm going to tell you something we didn't see because the snow is covering it. You have a foundation problem. I know for a fact because my girlfriend has Polaroids. Oh, that, sure. No problem. I know about that. I was going to have that fixed. I'll tell you what I do. I know a local guy that'll do it for $1,200. So I get back down the city. I'm thinking, maybe if he has that foundation fixed, I'll get it. I think it's good. He keeps calling to see when I want to buy it, when I want to do the closing. Renee is going, don't deal with this man anymore. Give up right away. I don't like the way he sounds. I don't trust him. He sounds like my father. She says, if you're going to be so stubborn and do it, at least get a contractor to check out the house. So I call up Benicia. I don't know any contractors. I get one recommended. He's going to come over for $35 just to look at the place. Renee and I rent a car. We drive up. There's no key. The guy's eyes are rolling in his head. Once again, she wedges the door open with the saw. We go in. The guy looks around and goes, Jesus, I don't know. It's a winterized? I said, yes, it is. Well, what's this furnace doing up in the attic? Christ, I don't know. I know the guy's desperate. I know that for a fact. I'd offer him $26,000, and I'd insure it real well for fire, and I'd pay someone $50 to burn it down. And I got back down to New York City, and God, I kept calling up the contractor up there, Ned Perkins, to see if he'd heard from Johnny Delfredo about fixing the foundation. Ned hadn't heard anything, so I called Johnny Delfredo, got his answering machine. Johnny called Renee, got her answering machine. I called up Ned Perkins. He wasn't in. He was the weak link in the communication triangle. He had no answering machine. So we're kind of bouncing it around. Suddenly, Johnny Delfredo, the owner of the house, finds out that I've been meddling by calling Ned Perkins to try to find out if he's going to fix the foundation. And Johnny calls Renee's answering machine and leaves this unbelievable, irate, kind of quite long message. I saved the tape. Now, you tell me if you would buy a house from a man that sounds like this.
Spaulding, I received a message about Ned Perkins, and it's the second message I've received, and I'm very perturbed about the idea of you calling up state constantly and spoiling for me with these people up there who think that now they're the only people in the world that can do the job for me. I gave you a written agreement and signed it, and there's no reason in this world why you should doubt my integrity. I intend to follow through. There's been a great deal of rain up there, and they can't work when it's so wet. And it will be taken care of. But please do not call anymore up there because they're spoiling it for me. And it's making it cost, since it's costing me the money. I'm agreeing to pay for this out of my own. I think I should be the one to deal with them, don't you? Please go along with the fact that I did sign an agreement with you, and I have a written agreement with you, and there's no reason in this world why you should constantly think that somebody's trying to take advantage of you. I don't intend to do that. And I would appreciate it if you would leave the job to me. I'm having the foundation work done, since I'm paying for it. It will be done, rest assured. And if it's not Ned Perkins, it will be someone else. But it will be someone of my choosing. And I will take the trouble to find out who's going to do it and when they can do it. And when it's feasible for them to do it. They cannot work with their up to their ears in mud and expect the foundation to stay. They have to wait for the situation to dry up. And if I can't do it by June 1st, it will be done a month later. But it has to be given the time to dry up. The extensive amount of rain upstate has led to this kind of a thing. We've had an excessive amount of rain, and I'm sure you read the papers and know what's happening upstate. I will take care of it.
Listen to him hang up the phone. So I bought the house. And I get up there. And I sit down on a Castro convertible couch. I felt no sense of ownership. I felt someone owned the house before me. Now I owned it. And someone would own it after me. I hoped. And now it was time to make a will. Now, the first thing that I wanted to do was claim the cabin as my own. Get that furniture out of there. I called Howie, my shaman friend from Crumville, to come over and help me. I began loading the furniture into a shed out back because I was sure one day it would be valuable. He said, Spald, I think a yard sale is in order. There's some furniture that just never comes into vogue. The next thing I want to do is I want to open a post office box downtown, so I'll feel a part of the town. I go down there, open a post office box. I eat downtown at Brio's, downtown Phoenicia, because my refrigerator's broken. Something's wrong with the Freon. I guess it's a leak or something. And I walk back from downtown, and by then it's night, and I realize why I've moved up there. It is so beautiful, so much wildness, so close to New York City. And I'm walking. There are no streetlights, and it's dark, and I can feel the woods breathing around me. I walk right past my house. I'm so enchanted by the dark, and I can hear the streams bubbling and the brooks flowing and the bears thrashing and the psychopaths coming, you know. And I get so nervous, I turn back for the house, and I see what looks like a full moon ahead, and I round the corner. It's the next door neighbor. He has one of those huge incandescent lamps, burglar lamps, that go on automatic pilot as soon as the sun goes down and lights the entire neighborhood up like cinema 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. You can't see any satellites, comets, let alone stars. I went to bed depressed. The following day, I woke up and I thought, cosmetics. Two guys come up, they say $5,000 for cosmetics. I think, wait a minute, I got a leak. As it is, I got a leak on my precious log beams, they're gonna rot. I need a handyman who's gotta just be handy with his hands around the house while I write. And I can go, hey, look out, you be handy now, I'm working over here. Those guys are so hard to find. I find this guy downtown, he hands me his card. It's a picture of him at about 6 years old with his head completely shaved. I don't know if it was an early punk, a ringworm, or what, but he's got this saw, and he's got the saw upside down, and he's cutting a board on the edge of a Heyer's root beer box. And underneath the card, it says, Coot Dunbar, entrepreneur. And he comes up with a big bucket of tar, and he's swatting it on the chimney. And every time I tell him something, he can say, oh, I can grok that. Oh, I can grok that. I can grok that. And he does. I say, fix my screens. He groks my screens for $100. Now I'm out on the porch. I mean, that's it. I'm out there. I'm cooking on an hibachi out on the porch. I'm drinking a lot out on the porch. I mean, it's like I bought this porch for $35,000, right? In the heart of the Catskills. I'm only going in to sleep in my bed, you know, at night, and I'm sleeping with a butcher knife by the bed because of the silence up there. Next day I wake up, I think, refrigerator day, refrigerator day. So I call up Starkey Jakes, the refrigerator man. Say, hello, Starkey. Hi. This is Mr. Gray, you know, the new homeowner up on Shady Valley Road. I think I've got a bit of a Freon problem here with my refrigerator. Oh, I'm up Shady Valley Road! I'll be up all about it! I'll be up there by early morning! So while I'm waiting for Saki Jakes to come up, I see these two women coming up over the Hillendale Affair with a little 10-year-old boy between them, with a string tie like this on a July death. Oh, housewarming, housewarming. I don't see any cakes or pies, but I think they're coming to warm my house. And then she goes, hello. Have you heard? Have you heard about the great crowd? No. I mean, that's part of why I left New York. What are you talking about? She said, and she opened her Bible, and she came a little further onto the porch, and she wanted to read to me just a few sections. And then she says, isn't it a lovely thought that we're going to live forever? And it's just around the corner. Adam and Eve didn't have children until they sinned. And until you can understand that, all your prayers will just be like putting paint on a house that's falling down. She's got my number. She's been standing out on the street watching the house fall, just choosing that message. She wants to sell me a book, Let Your Kingdom Come. You know, just a dollar the cost of the printing. I'll buy anything. I mean, I haven't got a library yet. I think I'll start it with this. You know, why not read it till Stocky Jakes comes to fix the refrigerator? So she sells it to me. I can't get past the first picture. It's great. I have a blow up here of God's Kingdom Come. Idyllic picture, little black girl in the corner with a little purring leopard cub. Up above, mama leopard's content, not about to leap, sleeping on a branch. Mom and dad with a little kid, mom with her vegetables pouring out of her basket, dad with his fruit and hoe, dad sober. Happy, smiling. Down behind them, the third world people, knowing their place in the evolutionary ladder, slowly coming up the hill. Then behind them, a pond with ducks. And here, way in the corner, you can barely see it, but I'm obsessed with it. Houses with perfect foundations. And I'm like, here, question for discussion. What would God's kingdom mean to you if soon it brought the conditions pictured here? Foundations. While I'm obsessing on the foundations, Stocky Jakes arrived in his pickup truck. He's got his 10-year-old kid with him. It must be summer vacation. He walks in, looks around, says, "By Cheesem Crow. You didn't buy this place, did ya?"
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the chocolate room. Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look and you'll see into your imagination. We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it, want to change the world, there's nothing to it. I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be. you want a view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it. Want to change the world? There's nothing to it. If I know to compare with pure imagination, living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to.
Mr. Gene Wilder for singing to us about the imagination. And before that, we heard a recording from 1988 from Spalding Gray. I think it was recorded downtown somewhere. He was with the Wister Group at the time, I believe. I hope you enjoyed it. It's sort of a familiar story up here, right? Anyway, during my show, which is the first Thursday of the month from 8 to 9, I feature a spoken word performer like Gene Shepherd. I play some music according to who they are and where they are, and I did that musical thing today just in honor of the show slot that I'm in. But one thing that I also do every week or every show is I play a recording of a recipe. Today's recipe I'm just going to give to you now because I just made it over the weekend. So I'm going to give you a recipe from my Aunt Lena. It's for zucchini and mint. But I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to find a piece of paper and a pen that works. And until then, I'm going to warm up this Victrola and play you a 1937 recording of Benjamin Giglio. And when we return, I'm going to have a great recipe for you of mint and zucchini. So you're going to start with about 3 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil in a large skillet. Cook it until the oil itself starts smoking. You want it hot. Meanwhile, you're going to dice up 3 cloves of garlic and 2 full zucchinis. Now, when you cube the when you cut the zucchinis, they're going to be cut into cubes. You're going to add some salt to them to draw out the moisture. You're going to prep the meal by dicing up your garlic, cubing up your zucchini, adding the salt to it, and then you're going to cut up a nice handful batch of fresh mint. So once the oil is sort of smoking, you're going to add in the garlic and very quickly add in the zucchini. You want the zucchini to kind of turn over a few times. You really want it crisp with the garlic. And then you're going to turn the heat down and add in a handful of fresh mint. Give that a couple of minutes to kind of congeal and work together. And then you're going to turn the heat up and put in a 1/4 cup of balsamic vinegar. And that will kind of boil up and come back down together when you take it off the flame. You can serve it room temperature with bread or other olives. It's my Aunt Tessie's zucchini and mint recipe. Well, you have been listening to Gregory Forte's Radio Museum here on WGXC out of Catskill, New York. Think I have time for Mr. Walt Whitman to sneak in and tell us a little bit about the clear sky. Actually, the clear midnight sky. Let's see if I can get him under the wire here.
A Clear Midnight by Walt Whitman. This is thy hour, O soul, thy free flight into the wordless, away from books, away from art, the day erased, the lesson done, thee fully forth emerging, silent, gazing, pondering the themes thou lovest best, night, sleep, and the stars.
Well, it's almost time for me to say good evening and hand over the airwaves. But before we do that, I have one more song I'm going to be able to sneak on, I believe. Thanks for offering me this hour. And if you're interested in hearing any of these old voices from the past, again, that went back to 1988 with Spalding Gray. But other recordings I play are people like Gene Shepherd, who did a great show in the 70s, and people like that. So anyway, if I stop talking, I'll get a chance to play this tune. So again, thanks for listening and enjoy.
singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feel, and I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart, and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane with a happy refrain, just singing, singing in the rain. Dancing in the rain, yeah, 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 yeah. I'm happy again. I'm singing.